Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a March Madness edition of PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me today, Ron Ofer and Josh Landsberg. Gordon Glantz celebrating the Union's 3-0 victory today with Sons of Ben, I'm sure, so he will not be on the show. Let's get right to it. Villanova has not been in the Sweet 16 since 2009, and Ron, they're in it now with a dominating performance, 87-68 over Iowa today, and that score doesn't even do justice to how dominant Villanova was. Let's look forward, or let's look back. Let's just say, what did they do today that just blew the Hawkeyes off the floor?
They did everything well. I mean, they certainly shot the ball well. They defended well. I can't say they defended overly aggressively. They certainly rebounded well. I was limited to one shot down the court practically the entire game. And when they weren't hitting their shots, it just became a blowout. I think it went as high as 34-point margin at one point in the second half. So you're right, Eric, even though it got into the teens down the stretch. And, in fact, Jay Wright put his starters back in with a minute left when it got cut to 16. And you'd think, well, a 16-point lead with a minute left is where just about every coach would want to be. But not when you start out 20-some most of the game, 34, I think, at the high. But, you know, to back up for a second, and I've been one of their biggest critics, and you know, Eric, I've occasionally questioned why Jay Wright's still the coach at Villanova. They just seem to play soft at tournament time, and at least they answered their critics at this level of team. And Iowa is a mystery, an enigma kind of team. I mean, they were number 3 in the country in January, and they arguably marginally belonged in the tournament the way they were playing down the stretch, so you didn't quite know what to expect out of Iowa, and obviously we, you know, those Philadelphia area fans, the Big Five fans, watched Iowa intently when they played Temple the other night on Friday night, so Friday afternoon actually. So, you know, we got a glimpse of them being a solid team, but nothing spectacular. So I'm reserving judgment about Villanova's Final Four chances now that they take on a pretty solid Miami team next, and then. You know, it could be even that much more of a test after that, but let's not look past that.
Okay, we'll get there, Ron. I'll come back to you for that one. Josh, this Villanova team's done everything for the past couple of years, this group of seniors. I mean, there's only a couple seniors on the team, really. Arcia Nakano and Daniel Shefu are the two guys who play the most. There's a couple other guys there. And during those 4 years, and you know, the guys were juniors now the past 3 years, you know, this team's won Big East championships. It's won Big East regular season titles. They've got 30 wins. But how important was it, Josh, for them to, you know, they've been really good, but, you know, it's all about the tournament in the end. And you know, Villanova's season didn't mean anything up until if they don't win today. And so I'm asking you, how important was it for this program? And Ron even alluded to his questions about Jay Wright. How important was it for this program and for Jay Wright to make the Sweet 16?
Oh, it was huge, Eric, and Ron kind of alluded to some of the stuff I was going to talk about also. I used to be a big Jay Wright fan kind of earlier on in his career, but you mentioned not going to the Sweet 16 since 2009, and it's all about the tournament. Coaches like Tom Izzo, although not this year, obviously, a huge 15-2 upset, but coaches like Tom Izzo usually and Coach K and guys like that are not there because they're so great in the regular season. They're there because they're such great tournament coaches, and they get far in the tournament, they win championships, and Villanova hasn't won a championship, obviously, since that great 1985 team that haven't won a championship under Jay Wright. They haven't done really well in the tournament under Jay Wright, and I think that's really surprising to me that Jay Wright is still there in a lot of ways. I mean, he always has good regular seasons, and he's always got them contending, but they've been high seeds in the past. They've been, I think, a number one seed in the past before. They're a number two this year, and they haven't performed in the tournament, and that's why I was actually surprised by this and pretty impressed by this when Ron talked about the Iowa team. I believe they lost 5 out of the last 6 down the stretch, but they were a top 3 seed earlier on in the season, and they were a team that's kind of an enigma. But they did beat Temple, a pretty good Temple team this year, and, you know, obviously on a last-second play, crazy play to win that game. But I thought that Iowa was going to give Villanova a little bit more of a test. You know, that 2-7 can kind of be an interesting matchup. You see it two go down in that spot a lot of times. And Villanova being a soft tournament team, I thought this was going to be a much closer game. So Villanova did show me something by winning by, you mentioned, 19 points, and they were up by as many as 34 at one point. So they really showed me that they can't, they didn't overlook Iowa. They are coming to play this year, and maybe they will make a deep tournament run.
Josh, you mentioned the 34-point edge. Yeah.
Let me just run. Far be it for me to defend Jay Wright, but he did take a team to the Final Four in 2009, but it has been quite a drought since then and some embarrassing early losses, not even getting out of the first weekend.
Right, and they've done that as a higher seed. That's the other – I mean, hey, you know, somebody will point out, well, you know, Fran Dunphy hasn't gotten Temple out of there, you know, but, you know, they're usually not a higher seed. You know, so it's one thing to come in as a 10, you know, win a couple rounds. It's another thing to come in as a 2 or a 3 and be expected to advance and not do it.
Yeah, Eric, they're usually packing only the white jerseys when they head out for the first weekend.
That's right. And Josh mentioned the 34-point edge. Yeah, at one point, Villanova was up 65-31, which was the 34. So they actually had doubled Iowa's scoring. You know, this 19-point margin, I don't even think the game was that close, the 19-point. Ron, let me ask you a question before we get to Havel do. And that is, you know, the conference are always reshuffling. And they went through this basketball reshuffling a couple years ago. And Villanova was in the group that basically got to keep the Big East name, you know, and then the American Athletic Conference basically sold it to them, and there was a whole rights thing, but whatever. My question is, though, this Big East is not the old Big East. And when I look at some of the other conferences, I guess my question is, you know, Villanova's had a lot of regular season success in this conference and not done so well in the tournament. Is part of that maybe that the Big East no longer prepares them very well to play in the NCAA tournament?
I'm trying to recall. I think some of these stumbles occurred before the changeover, though, Eric, so I'm not ready to buy into that theory. I think it does help when you're tested throughout the season, though, and it doesn't seem like Villanova puts those really top-type teams like a North Carolina or Kansas on their out-of-conference schedule. In fact, Temple would often play Kansas as an example. I would almost give Temple more credit for testing themselves out of conference over the years than Villanova tends to. So I think in some ways you make a good point about that, Eric. And you also look at Seton Hall and them losing to Seton Hall in the Big East tournament final, which is that much more disconcerting for a few reasons. I think there's a strong chance they would have stayed in the East region and now come to Philadelphia to play, which would have been very fascinating and enjoyable for a lot of their fans. And I think they blew that opportunity with losing the Big East tournament. It's that much more upsetting for a Villanova fan to watch Isaiah Whitehead look like God one day and then shoot something like 4-for-25 in a terrible effort against Gonzaga the other night. So it's like, why did Seton Hall even bother to win the Big East tournament if they weren't going to show up for the NCAA opening game? So there's just a lot of things floating around Villanova right now. And I liked watching them play today with what looked like almost a chip on their shoulder. And yet, I think you're really, truly more battle-tested when you play a tight game. And I think that's what you're alluding to, Eric. When you're in a conference that doesn't afford you that many tight games, and you can shrug off the occasional loss because, oh, well, it was on the road, and you were tired, and you might have your third game that week, and they were, you know, your opponent was primed and your team wasn't primed. You can easily say they kind of walked through the regular season knowing that they would make the NCAAs, they come in as a high seed. It didn't really matter that much whether they were a 1 or 2 or whether they get to play in Philadelphia or not to them. And now's the time. And I don't think it's a given they're beating Miami. So, again, I'll reserve judgment. That'll be their first team that they're going up against that really has a legitimate chance to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Big East, I see the only two teams really that I think push them are Xavier, which I think is a very good team, and Providence, which has two exceptional players in Dunn and Bentel, and then has some decent players the rest of the way. So that's why I asked the question.
Well, Xavier,
Josh,
you bring up a good point, Eric. Yeah. You know, when Seton Hall beat Xavier, great break for Villanova because they lost to Xavier badly once. And did they lose them twice in the season? I know they lost them pretty badly once. And great break for them. They're going to win it. They're going to get that probably top seed in the East. North Carolina will have to settle for being in the South or something like that. And it just didn't work out that way.
Josh, before we go to you, I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, if you have a question, say your name and then your question, please. Looking for a caller whose phone number ends in 5684. You have a question? Okay, if not, you just... you're just listening live, we'll come back to you and we'll see if you have a question later on. That's okay. Josh, where do they go from here? So they've got Miami in Louisville, and then they're going to play, let's not get to the next game, but they have a chance to be playing Kansas. What do you think, what's your preview for Miami, or does it matter? Let me ask you this. If they don't win that game, is this season a disappointment, or do they need to win that game to make this season a success?
Yeah, I think they need to go to at least in my tournament, I have them going to the Elite Eight and losing in Kansas in that matchup. So I think they need to go to at least the Elite Eight to make it a success. They were at one point the number, for a little while actually, they were the number one overall seed in the entire country. So and they, obviously didn't win their conference tournament, and maybe that knocked them off for being a one seed. They could have possibly been a one seed instead of their two seed. But I think that they have to go to the Elite Eight for it to be a success, possibly even the Final Four. But obviously Kansas is a very solid team and probably will end up going to the Final Four, I think. So I think that Miami is a very good team. Ron talked about them. I think they're a very good team, and I could see that game going either way. But if I had to pick it, I think Villanova is going to win and go to the Elite Eight.
Okay. Ron, you have a prediction on that?
Sorry. Well, in my pool, I had Miami winning, but I don't know. It's really hard to extrapolate whether Villanova, looking like they're ready to play and coming out and dominating both games really this weekend or in the first weekend, means anything or not. And I'm going to say it the third time. I'm reserving judgment until I see them come out against a team that is at least closer to their equal. And in terms of what to expect, no, I think it would be a disappointment if they lost to Miami. I mean, it's a 2-3 game. In theory, anything can happen in a 2-3, but it would still be an upset. They're expected to win that game. I think you forgive them if they lose to Kansas, who's the number one seed in the entire tournament, particularly if they make a good showing. You realize, okay, well, that's about as far as they were going to get, and that's an acceptable season. But, no, I think losing to Miami makes it another disappointment.
Okay, I think we lost Josh. So, Josh, I give a call back. I'll give the caller again the chance to ask a question. Name and question? Okay. All right. Josh, maybe Josh will call back. Josh, by the way, is, I should point out, Josh is calling us. He's on his way driving to spring training in Arizona and has called in during this time, which is very nice of him. So
but not
hopefully we'll get him back.
No,
right. I'm sorry. Yes, he's on the West Coast. He's not driving from Philadelphia to Arizona. That would be quite a trip. Ron, let's go to St. Joe's, which is playing tonight. We're obviously, if you're listening to this game, this show in archive, this is before the St. Joe's game on Sunday, which doesn't tip off till 9:40, which doesn't make me very happy, but it's a little late. It's not the game, but actually then writing the story afterwards. But Ron, they're going against the number one seed, Oregon, and part of you says, well, they need to just, it's got everything to go right to win that game. And I guess my question, though, is do they have a legitimate chance to beat Oregon?
Well, the fact that the Pac-12 is something like 1-10 in the tournament so far, something horrendous, gives me hope. I think they have a chance to stay with them, yes. I think it's very realistic that they'll hang in this game. And the longer you hang in, as we've seen, the better chance you have. But then sometimes it's still, Cinderella clock strikes midnight. Sometimes, even if you can hang close for 38 minutes, 39 minutes and change, as we saw with Stephen F. Austin earlier today, you really have to see it all the way through. But, yeah, I think they're going to give a good game. I think it's great to watch Phil Martelli back in the tournament. People had forgotten him. It was over a decade ago since they had that perfect season, the regular season, made the Elite Eight and lost to Eddie Sutton's Oklahoma State team in a really tight battle. That was a Jameer Nelson, Delonte West team. And they really haven't made any noise since then on a national level. So it would be really great if they either gave Oregon a scare or even managed to pull it off. They'd be the talk of the town. They really knocked Villanova off the front page, really, if they could win that game.
Yeah, although it would be late enough that some newspapers won't have it. Knock it off the front
page.
That's
the euphemism, Eric. Everyone's on the web now.
that's true. I will say just, when you say not make any noise, that by the way, was the last time St. Joe's had won an NCAA game before the other night when they beat Cincinnati. And and speaking of not making any noise, that locker room, I will never forget that locker room after the loss to Oklahoma State. One of the quietest, saddest locker rooms, most heartbroken, I'll say, heartbroken, quietest locker rooms I've ever been in. I felt so badly for those guys. Just you couldn't help but feel badly for them, as much as they, you know, they had achieved and how great a team they were. You know, coming that close to the Final Four and not making it as this little school, you know, against most of these big power schools. So that I'll never forget that team in that locker room. I really enjoyed covering that team, by the way. Josh, we were talking about St. Joe's. Before we move on to tonight's game, we did talk about a little with Ron. I want to go back to Friday night and just get your thoughts. It was the last game of the first round, and it may have been the last two games of the first round may have been the two most exciting games. Was Northern Iowa with Paul Jesperson hitting the mid-court shot beat Texas as the time expired, and then St. Joe's. Have you ever seen a game end like that, like the Cincinnati game?
No, unbelievable finish. I've never seen anything like that before. You know, the tournament kind of brings that every year. That's why they call it March Madness. You see last-second buzzer beaters, not necessarily half-court shots like that, but you see last-second buzzer beaters, you see double overtime games, you see triple overtime games. So that's what makes the tournament so great, not just the tournament, but the conference tournaments also before the full NCAA tournament takes place. There's just so much excitement in March, and that's why they call it March Madness, and it's so much fun to watch. Just unbelievable, some of these games, how it turned out. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure on this, Eric, you can confirm this or not, but I believe this year marked set history. It was the most lower seed that upset the higher seed in the first round in the tournament ever. I believe you are leading the way in the Philly Fanatics pool because you picked some of those upsets. So it was the first time ever also that on the same day, consecutive day game, a 13 seed won, a 14 seed won, and a 15 seed won. So just a lot of craziness, even more so this year than in past years.
Yeah, we got the two number 12s and the three 11s. And somehow I didn't pick either number 12 team to win,
that's good to be the place to pick them usually, Eric. Yeah, you've done phenomenally well. I will say this, though. I can't remember a time when, and this was actually true as of last night, I believe, it's a guarantee that a 10-plus or plus higher seed will be in the Elite Eight. It's already a guarantee because you have Syracuse playing Middle Tennessee and then playing Gonzaga next, the winner of that 10-15 game is playing an 11, so I can't ever recall where that's already been a guarantee so early, basically on the third day.
Yep, and Gonzaga, obviously, because that 11 is playing very well. Ron, St. Joe's, again, you know, how much would it mean? You talked about it, you started to go there, so let me keep going with it. How much would it mean to their program to knock off a top seed, Oregon, and get to the next round? And quite frankly, you know, Duke's not Duke anymore. They would have a chance to win that game, I would think, St. Joe's. How important would it be for them to beat a number one seed?
Well, I think I'm looking at it. You're asking me maybe from pride. I'm going to look at it from a practical standpoint, recruiting. They're a small school. They tend to draw kids from the area, and they're still competing with other area schools that have a higher profile, most namely Temple and Villanova. So, in essence, to get into the second weekend gives them that much more exposure. They'll be talked about all week. People will not help but, you know, who are into college basketball or high schoolers who are playing college basketball will start to respect that program again. Phil Martelli has done a great job over the years. He's had some NIT teams in the meantime. You know, he just doesn't really get the cream of the crop talent over there. It's occasional where he can get a player that can make a difference at the tournament level get his team perceived of as a possible top 25 team. It's very rare that you can build toward that when you're a school of that size. They're not even mid-major. I mean, you can't even consider them that, I don't think. So, yeah, the quick answer is, yeah, it would do wonders for the program to both knock off a number one seed and get to keep playing. And then they'll get the stage against Duke if that were to happen. And, you know, like you said, maybe they would win, but even if they do not, to get that far, I think would do wonders and put them back on the map, really.
Yeah, and, you know, they do have, I mean, like you said, they don't get always the best players. They do have an outstanding player in DeAndre Bembry, who's gets overlooked is what a good defensive player he is. I mean, Oregon has more horses than St. Joe's does, but one of the things, and I heard this brought up even when the brackets first came out, one of Oregon's strengths is they have big guys play away from the basket and are mobile. And really, that's what St. Joe's does. I mean, St. Joe's doesn't have the big guy in the middle. Their big guys move and are outside. Style-wise, they match up pretty well. They like to play the same style that Oregon plays. Now, that can work against you if you're playing the same style and the other team's just that much better talent-wise. But, it'll be an interesting matchup tonight, 9:40 tip-off. Josh, we don't want to leave without talking about Temple. Temple loses by 2 in overtime. They come back with Quentin DeCozy, scores a basket late in the game, and then gets fouled with 2.1 seconds left, makes all 3 free throws. But they do lose in overtime. What can we say about Temple's program right now?
Well, it was an unbelievable game. I mean, to hit all 3 free throws in clutch time and be able to send it into overtime, and then they had a chance to win it at the end. They had free throws at the line with a couple seconds with, 10 seconds to go or something like that. And they had a chance to win it, or at least put them up by 1 or 2 points. And, of course, the guy tries the Kobe Bryant hero fadeaway shot for Iowa on the other side, missed it, airballs it, and they get the rebound and put it back up and in. So, I mean, Temple came in as a 10 seed. They had a pretty good year, but I thought they should have won that game, even though they were technically the underdog. I thought they should have won that game. And, I think that they it's a disappointment for them not to get out of the first round of the tournament. But just to touch on St. Joe's Oregon real quick also, I wanted to throw my 2 cents in. I think that it's going to be an exciting game, and it would mean a lot. Ron touched on a lot of the points already, but it would mean a lot to them to get to the Sweet 16. And I'll talk about it more on the show next week, but I plan my trip around them. It's 6:40 West Coast time. I'm making the drive from L.A. to Arizona to go to the Cactus League. The Phillies obviously don't play there, but I'm going to see the Dodgers and World Series champion Royals play in spring training games. So I'll report next week on some of the things that I saw. But I'm going to be able to get to my hotel or get to a sports bar and watch that game live and have my dinner. And looking forward to watching St. Joe's Oregon. And I think that Ron touched on this also. I think that the Pac-12 is one of the weaker conferences, major conferences out there. They set a record for teams. They just horrible performances. Oregon's the only team left out of the Pac-12, and I think they're probably the weakest number one seed out of the 4 number one seeds. So there you go. St. Joe's has a chance to win tonight.
So I should have added that to my fish and chips column. I mentioned how nobody knows anything, no matter who, all these experts. And I can't tell you how many experts I heard talking about how good the Pac-12 on Selection Sunday, about how good the Pac-12 was this year, right? And the tournament starts, and they all go out, including I include myself in the I thought the safest team to make the Final Four was Michigan State, and we saw how that went. All right, let's switch gears. The tournament's just been absolutely outstanding. Let's switch gears, Ron, to the Flyers. They had a great stretch, 8-1-1. Have a bad loss to the Penguins, not so much that they lost, but how lopsided that game was Saturday. Today, news comes out, Michael Neuwirth, who was supposed to start that game, has a knee injury that will keep him out the rest of the year. Ron, actually, before I go to you, let me just give the caller a chance in case the caller wants to talk hockey instead of basketball. Caller, you have a question? Comment?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's your name?
I'm Sue from Cherry Hill, but what I wanted to ask, it's still about basketball, is do you think Indiana has a shot of going further into the tournament?
Oh, this is a question right up Josh's alley, so I'm going to give this one to Josh.
Josh is going to say yes.
I think that it's a good question, Carl. You must be an Indiana fan. I think they do have a shot. They really impressed me against Kentucky. I picked them to go to the Sweet 16 and to lose to North Carolina, so I don't have them winning at all in my bracket. I went to Indiana, and I had to pick a bracket the way I thought it was going to go, not pick them to win at all just because I went there. But I think they have a shot. I would put it at 60-40. 60% chance North Carolina wins, 40% chance Indiana wins. And I think Indiana does have a chance, if they beat North Carolina, sure, to go to the Final Four, and that would be really exciting. Actually, a little piece of history about them. The last, they were a number one seed a few years ago, last time they went to the Sweet 16, and they lost to Syracuse in the Elite Eight, I believe. But before that, back in 2002, my senior year of high school, which is kind of actually what put it over the top and pushed me to go to Indiana, they went to the Final Four as a number five seed. They're a number five seed again this year. So I think that that kind of bodes well for them, just a little piece of history about being a five seed. And I think that we'll see what happens. But I think North Carolina is the better team. But I'll quote Charles Barkley, who said, when North Carolina is at their best and playing their best, no one can beat them. They're the best team in the country. But the truth is, he said, that they rely on their talent too much, and sometimes they don't put forth enough effort. So if Indiana puts forth more effort and gets to the loose balls and hits the three-pointers, I think that Indiana can win this game.
Thank you.
There you go. So
I
want to
throw in a bit of history, Eric. You may remember this, Josh. Maybe you don't. I'm not quite sure how old you are, but the last time Philadelphia got to host the championship final before they stopped playing them in arenas and started playing them in things like football stadiums was Indiana, North Carolina in 1981. It was the night that President Reagan got shot, and there was a question about whether they might even go ahead and play the game. And it turned out Indiana, I believe Landon Turner was their star player. I think Steve Alford might have been on that team as well. And Indiana won convincingly that night. And it'll be a rematch in Philadelphia 35 years later.
Wow, that's, that's what I was going to say. So were you an Indiana fan?
Yes.
Well, Ron just gave you one piece of trivia. I'm going to throw another one on there. Not only did they win the NCAA championship in 81 in Philadelphia, they also won it in 76 at the Philadelphia Spectrum, where the bicentennial of all sorts of stuff was here. So Indiana coming to Philadelphia this weekend, that's a good omen for you.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the call. Thank you very much. Ron, let's go back to the Flyers for a second. 8-1-1, tough loss, Pittsburgh. They have a four-game road trip up coming up. What do they need to do in these four games?
Gosh, Eric, I mean, I'm almost stuck on the news about Michael Neuwirth because Michael Delzato's out for the season. If I'm Michael Raffel, I wrap myself in bubble wrap at this point because the Michaels are going down on this team. But to not have a backup that's played as well as Neuwirth, even though Mason's kind of taken the reins of late, with every point meaning something and you don't want to wear Mason out, that is just that much harder for this team. And a team that looked like it was skating in quicksand Saturday afternoon, just when you thought that they'd found their stride and might claim themselves, get above the line and look like they were a playoff team. And it was the game of the year. There's no question it was the game of the year in terms of interest level. And they came out, I wouldn't say they were flat the whole game, but they had a bad stretch at the end of the second period, and they really couldn't get any offense going. So I'm hoping it was just a matchup thing with Pittsburgh. So to answer your question, Eric, they need to skate. I mean, they look very slow. They need to move the puck. I'm hoping that game was an aberration, but, you know, when you play against top teams and you're down the stretch, you really have to show up and play your game. They looked incredibly passive. So, again, I just hope they shake it off if they want to make some noise, because, quite honestly, much as I would like to see them beat Pittsburgh, they got two more games against Pittsburgh. Detroit is a team that is sinking like a stone, and that's the team they need to catch. You can only catch them if you win on your own merit.
Yeah, it seems like they also had the game of the year was Tuesday against Detroit, right? And then after they won that, then Saturday became the game of the year. It worries me because now, you know, Mason's has been hurt a decent amount this year. Now, you know, all of a sudden you're one tweak away from Anthony Stolarz, and no offense to Anthony Stolarz, but that's not the guy you want to see in there.
You never know. He might win the Conn Smythe Award. He might pull a Ken Dryden. You never know.
Right. You never know. But, and of course they do start this road trip with back-to-back games on Monday and Tuesday against the Islanders and the Blue Jackets. So, Josh, we're going to hang on until after the archive test. I don't want to cut you short on your answer. So we'll just keep you hanging in there. Just tell people, first of all, Josh, when your call dropped, by the way, I did mention terrific effort by you calling in on your way to spring training in Arizona. So thank you very much. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. We got Villanova game stories up there. We'll have a St. Joe's game story up there later tonight. My Fish and Chips column is all about the NCAA. So is my column in the Midnight Hour. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com and talk to you next week on the show live. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. And Sue, thank you for the call. We'll go to archive now, Josh. Let's get your thoughts on the Flyers, what they've done, and in terms of how they've climbed their way back into this race. I mean, we're talking about whether they're going to make it or not to the playoffs. But, Josh, what do you think it says about this team and the job Dave Hakstol has done that they've been able to climb their way back in to even be in this position?
Well, I said this on previous shows about the Flyers, that in years when they make the playoffs, even some of their better teams, they tend to get off to slow starts, and then they have really good second half of the season and really make a strong push and make the playoffs. Even some of their better teams, they get off to a slow start and they make a great push the second half of the season. So that's what we're seeing now. You mentioned that great stretch of an 8-1-1 mark and playing really good hockey. And, you know, obviously losing Nyquist is a huge blow to them. He's probably one of the best, if not the best, backup goaltenders in the entire league. So it's a really big blow to them to have that happen. But Steve Mason has been playing really well. Hopefully he can stay healthy. And I think that the Flyers have a real shot here to make the playoffs now. They're only a few points back of the Detroit Red Wings, and they got a shot to make the playoffs. So I think that they played well, and they just got to keep it up. And Dave Hakstol, you mentioned, has done a really good job with this team. Ron Hextall has done a good job putting this team together. And I think that the future is really bright for this team. I don't think they were expected going into this year. I think Ron, you and I think all three of us, and, you know, maybe Gordon, too, all had the Flyers either missing the playoffs or just barely getting in. So they're exceeding expectations, I think, a little bit. They're still 1 or 2 years away from being a really solid team. They have a lot of young players on this team. They have a lot of young players in their minor league system. And I think that I could see this team being a really good team in a year or two. And they're showing me that they can maybe make the playoffs kind of ahead of schedule right now.
Yeah, they're 3 points behind Detroit. They got 2 games in hand, but you know those points, games in hand, do not equal points. So we'll see what happens. There is a reason for hope for me. It's that I thought Voracek certainly did not look like himself Saturday. He looked a little sluggish, not quite on the puck the way he normally is. And I'm going to hope that's not meaning he's still hurt, but that maybe it's just his first game back after missing 9 games. And he just had to, as they say, get his legs under him a little bit. And maybe we'll see the old Jake Voracek when they play the Islanders Monday, and also back in his old stomping grounds, I guess, in Columbus. I guess that's Ron. Unless you have another Flyers comment, we'll go right to final thoughts.
Well, I mean, you did ask about Dave Hakstol, and I think that he's proven to be an excellent coach. He demands accountability. He had a player, quality player like Jake Voracek, playing the fourth line for a while because he really was not earning the opportunity on the top line. I think there's a much more interesting culture on this team. And I don't want to knock Craig Berube, but it almost seemed like he put the same guys out there no matter how they were playing, and they looked very complacent playing under him. And you could see where they rose to the occasion playing against top teams and fell flat against bottom teams, and that's just not acceptable in this league. And quite honestly, the team still somewhat does that, but not nearly as badly. And I attribute that to the coaching change and to him impressing upon the players that they be accountable. And I'm going to be very excited to see the younger defenseman, particularly Ivan Provorov, who's probably the best defenseman in junior this year, bar none, playing in Brandon, Manitoba right now. I think over 20 goals, solid defensive game. You know, he's not even the only guy. I mean, we're waiting on Travis Sanheim as well. You know, they're playing without Delzato, another puck mover, Gostisbehere. You know, if he played the whole year, it would be a Calder Trophy candidate and still might be a finalist. He might fit in the top three. He's probably the fourth guy, though, but we'll see. So the future is bright, but there is a chance to get in the spotlight. And quite honestly, if they end up drawing Washington, they played Washington really tough. I think Washington would be pretty scared to end up with them as an opponent. I think they'd almost prefer Pittsburgh or for sure Detroit.
Yeah, certainly wouldn't be Washington's first choice. That's for darn sure. Ron, I just want to follow up on one of your points. You know what? We'll go to final. I'll say this. We'll have plenty of time for Flyers next week as we continue to talk tournament. Let's go to final thoughts. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, Josh is driving to spring training in Arizona. I wonder how many people have driven or flown to spring training in Clearwater. I continue to question, as I get practically a daily email with ticket offers from the Phillies, does anyone care
Are they going to draw more than, let's say, $1.4 million this year? Or am I painting a picture of doom and gloom? Maybe that's a rhetorical question. I don't really know. I mean, there are going to be a few players that are interesting to watch, but we've seen some of them already. It's not like they're brand new, but Michael Franco, Odubel Herrera, you know, Aaron Nola, there's some things that are interesting. I don't want to paint a bleak picture of the team's heading in the wrong direction. Quite honestly, there's a lot of other teams going into the tank in the National League as well. Milwaukee looks terrible. Cincinnati looks terrible. I'm not particularly impressed by what the Atlanta Braves look like on paper. And so the Phillies won't be alone at the bottom of the National League, that's for sure. They'll have company. There'll be four or five teams, you know, struggling to win 60 to 65 games.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Josh, your final thought?
Well, apropos of my trip, I'm going to talk about baseball as well. And I'll talk about a couple of teams that I'm going to be seeing. I'm going to see the Dodgers playing against the Kansas City Royals. And I think it's a story of two different tales from these two teams. You have a team that has overexceeded expectations the past few years, the Kansas City Royals, a team that not a lot of people would thought would be this good. They go to the World Series 2 years ago and lose, and they come back the next year, last year, and beat the Mets in the World Series. They have one of the lowest salary in terms of salary. They don't have a very high salary. They don't have a lot of high-paid guys on their team. They just have a good group of guys that play well together. And then on the other side, you have the Dodgers, who have really underperformed expectations there. I believe even with losing Zach Greinke, I think they're a top eight team in terms of Vegas putting the World Series odds. I think they're in the top eight. So Vegas still thinks they have a chance to win the World Series with some of the guys they have. But they've gotten rid of Matt Kemp, and they've lost Zach Greinke now, and they've lost some players. But they just have been a huge disappointment when it comes to postseason. They win the division or get the wild card or win the division, and then they don't show up in the postseason. So I think that we'll see what happens. It will be an interesting matchup to watch, even though it's only a practice game. It's obviously against the Royals. And some of the other teams I might see the Cubs, who, of course, are the National League Division Series champs, and a couple of teams that Ron mentioned, the Cincinnati Reds, who not too long ago were one of the better teams in the National League, are now going to be one of the worst teams in the National League. And the Milwaukee Brewers, same story, who I might see as well. They were not too long ago, had Prince Fielder and, you know, Ryan Braun still on the team, but they had C.C. Sabathia and Zach Greinke was on that team. Not all of them at the same time, but they have some good players on that team, and they just are going to be a huge disappointment this year. In the last couple of years, they haven't been that good. So it'd be interesting to watch. And in terms of the Phillies real quick, I don't think as many people will be going to Clearwater as in years past. They do have some interesting players on the team, and maybe they won't be the worst team in all of baseball this year. Maybe they'll maybe they'll creep up into the 70s. I don't think they're going to lose 99 games again. I think they got a shot to win who's left in 99 games.
Yeah, we already have the worst team in the NBA. We don't need the worst team in Major League Baseball.
Exactly.
I haven't taken a Sixer shot for a while, so there it is. My final thought, I'm going to stick with basketball, and two-part. One is, these are the first 4 days of the NCAA tournament might be my favorite sports days of the year. The tournament's just so fun to watch. I can tell you, if one time I had a hotel room, I would go to work. I worked at night, and then I would come. But I was off on a Friday, so I watched the daytime games. Went to work, came home, watched the night games, and then spent my entire Friday from noon through midnight. I think I don't know if I left the room. I think I got my food beforehand. Went to the gym in the morning, and then sat there and watched basketball all day long, which I used to love to do. Can't always do that work-wise, but I was up straight up through the end of the St. Joe's game after midnight on Friday night. Watching all the games in between, and it's just so exciting. And then in Philadelphia, we have something else unique here, which is a lot of people have one team they root for, and then they're done. And I just saw an article this past week talking about how New York is trying an idea to revitalize college basketball in New York by creating a Big Five-type atmosphere, a Big Five-type series in New York. And it's so unique that we get to watch the games, and we have, unless you're really dead set for one team and you hate the other teams, hey, when your team's out, you root for the other one. If you're a St. Joe's person, maybe not root for Villanova, but you'd root for Temple, and Temple might root for Villanova. And it's just so nice that we have three teams in there and three teams to root for. Temple's out now, but Villanova's still there, and St. Joe's is still there, and I hope they win tonight. And it's just such a unique situation that we have in Philadelphia, and we should not take it for granted. We should appreciate what we have. So that's it for this week's show. Again, lots of tournament coverage up on PhillyFanatics.com. all sorts of stuff, from game stories to columns to top runs by local teams. I will also have a Flyers notebook and a Sixers notebook up there shortly. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Sue for calling in. I know Josh wants to thank her for the Indiana question, which is right up his alley. That's it for this week's show. 2 weeks we will be doing, since you guys did baseball comments for final thoughts, I will point out in 2 weeks, probably at a special time, we will do our baseball preview show, but next week we'll be talking tournament and Flyers still. Thank you very much for listening. For Josh Landsberg on the road, Rod Ofer, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next week.